Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again.
Gavin keeps it. Skill on goal. Look at that pass. Haydock! Goal! Columbus!
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross and Dempsey's denied again. But Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
This is the beautiful game.
Oh! Incredible!
Described by two uglies.
Stupendous!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
This is a thing of genius.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am still a drunk Beam.
Well, good news. Me too, buddy. We're both drunk today. Because, it's a big episode for us. First of all, episode 69.
Nice. Very nice.
Very nice. The plan I initially had was maybe for episode 69, we would just talk about Nice from France. And then it could just, I thought maybe it'd just be like episode 69, Nice. And then, you know.
Oh, that is quite the dad joke there. That was, I was not expecting to laugh that hard immediately as we started the show, but.
Well,
that was so stupid.
For those of you hoping that we could do that, we're going to pause the Nice preview because we've got something a little bit more important to get to today. Columbus is the greatest team the world has ever seen. A 3-0 trouncing of the Seattle Sounders in MLS Cup. I don't want to say completely unexpected result, but. You know, this was something that we talked about last week and we previewed up this game. We didn't know when we previewed the game that they were going to be without Darlington Nagbe and Pedro Santos. And then they came out and played this game, Beam. Just put into thoughts your initial thoughts from that game. I mean, there's so much we can break down here today, but your initial thoughts from the game.
Yeah, you know, going into the game, T-Bone, it was... I think leading up through all of Saturday and really when you heard the news come out on Friday night that Darlington and Pedro were going to be out. I think, you know, obviously the people here in Columbus and the supporters of the organization and the club, you know, you were already nervous and you were pacing back and forth in your house leading up to the 8:30 kickoff. And with that news, I mean, you are thinking like, boy, I mean, we knew that we were in for a tough task against Seattle. What they bring offensively, the firepower that they harness within that organization and within that 11. And you hear that news and the guy who had been, you know, a damn rock for his entire career, right? And you get the news that he's out and the guy who has been controlling the left-hand side for the majority of the season with Pedro, he's out. And so, I mean, just going into the game, there's already even more nerves because of that news coming down. And you just look at this team and you're like, you know what? Still, like, I felt really good going into the game. I mean, you knew it was going to be a tough task, Bone, but at the same time, like, I don't know what it was. I don't know if there was just something special about this team. I don't know if it was the fact that you were playing it in front of your home fans. You're playing it at your home stadium, the last big hurrah for that stadium until they move into the new one. I don't know what it was, but initially I'm going in. I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling okay. And it was just – it was everything that we talked about, and it was a Crew fan's dream going in. The way that the Crew played in the first 20 minutes of that game, Bone, it was exactly what we had talked about. Caleb Porter and his ingenious system, do you have the ability to adapt on the fly and really put the gas pedal down? And it set the tempo for the rest of the match. The way that they were playing that, you're battling for 50-50 balls. You get a couple of breaks to go your way. You get a couple of bounces of the ball to go your way. You were pressuring them. Seattle did not know what hit them. It threw them out of rhythm for the entire match. The way that Columbus, that they were pressing on every single ball, on every single challenge. And then, I mean, just the main takeaway is that you could have paid $70 million for Lucas Zelarayán and he would have been worth every single penny. The dude was that special. Oh. I mean, first of all, you know, we'll break down the goals. I mean, the first one, does Stefan Fry have to do better on that against a near post ball? sure. The ball from Harrison Offal, though, Bone, was one of the best supply balls like you'll ever see.
Oh.
And then the touch from Zellerion to hit it with his left and put it on target. A lot of times, you know, you'll scuff that, or it'll go far post, or it'll go 50 rows into the stands above, whatever. Or, you know, you'll nick it and it goes out of bounds. It's no big deal. The fact that Zellerion waited for that, the tempo that he had on that ball to hit that right at the goalie, to get it on target, was amazing. And so, like I said, I mean, you can criticize Stefan Fry all you want. Probably should have saved it. Doesn't matter. The Crew were deserving of going up front in that game early. They did that. They kept on the pressure. And, yeah, man, it was really, to me, Bone, that first 25 minutes threw Seattle out of rhythm, and they were unable to get back kind of into it.
Yeah, it was so important to get that goal after the way they started that game. You're right. And by the way, for those who want to hear it, later in the episode, at the end of the episode, we will have all the goal calls for you from the radio broadcast, which I know a lot of people may not have heard because maybe you're watching on TV. I was listening to it. This is real. I had it synced up. I had paused, like, you know, the game broadcast on TV. I had my Bluetooth speaker sitting on our entertainment stand, and I had it through my phone on the app, the fan app. I was listening to the broadcast. So I was synced up. Action was perfect, right? That's tough to do when you get it all with delays and, you know,
right,
all that stuff. I had it all synced up. And for
you
the first,
tech wizard.
Well, here's the problem. For the first 25 minutes, we were good. And then Dom Tiberi called me to make sure we were good for wall to wall that night, because I was going to go on TV with at 10 TV with him and Dave Holmes after the game. And then the game's still going and I have no audio. And I'm like, where'd the audio go? What? And I realized my phone's ringing and Dom's calling. And I'm like, no, what? Oh, I didn't think about phone calls. And so then, yes, that ruined my sync up. So I had the rest of the game. I was back onto TV and I couldn't get it synced back up. And yeah, anyway, so thanks, Dom, for that. He didn't know that he did that, but it's fine. But that was... that broadcast, if you were watching the TV broadcast, you want to hear the audio calls. All those calls we will have at the end of this broadcast. So you can, or the end of this podcast. I don't know why I called it that. So you can hear all that, and you can hear the end of the game as well, which we put together for you. So that first goal, as you mentioned, was special. Zellerion having the quality to finish that, yeah, when the ball comes, again, a great supply ball. But it's the type of ball that in MLS, 99% of the guys in MLS will take a touch, bring it back across their body to their right foot, their preferred foot, and then try to beat the goalkeeper. And by that time, three people will have converged on you, or your goalkeeper will have come out of the net, and there's a 0% chance you're converting that, right? The fact that he hit it first time with his left, with his off foot.
Yeah, it's a goal that you score in FIFA.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But it's also, it's just the quality that you rarely see in MLS, and we said at the time when they brought him in, he has that quality that's a lot different than most of the guys in this league. And you've seen it at times this year. You saw it in Orlando with that first, that goal he had, where that free kick goal that was ridiculous. You know, you saw it in the New York game, in the first game, New York City FC, the first game that they played this year, where he had a couple guys in the box, but he made a play and kind of individual effort and still found a goal. Like Lucas Zellerion, you're right. Can't pay him enough. Can't pay him enough. This guy is unreal. And then the second goal, what a great story for Derek Etienne Jr.
No doubt. No doubt.
Guy who, you know, has been around the league, but certainly has not ever had a moment like that in MLS. And he was not expected to start. He was a guy who would, you know, presumably, and he had played well at times before he got the COVID diagnosis. He had come in, been, you know, a solid player. He had started plenty of games, but this was big for him to come in and fill in for Pedro Santos. They needed someone to get a goal here, because Pedro likely would have contributed to either a goal or an assist at some point in this match. So for Derek Etienne Jr. to get that, and of course Lucas Zellerion involved in that one too, that was part of his stamp on the game. But that second goal, it was wicked coming off of his foot.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was picture perfect, right? And so you already know that Lucas is in the bag. He's on the score sheet already. And any other player, I feel like, Bone, you know, with that kind of scoring prowess, will take his eyes on goal, right? I mean, top of the box, you're saying, yeah, you've scored this before. You've scored it probably plenty of times in the training grounds. And so what are you going to be able to do? And just the calmness and the presence of mind to lay that ball off to Derek Etienne. And, I mean, that shot, T-Bone, is picture perfect, you know? I mean, outside curler, whips it right back into the far post, you know, just enough pace to get past Fry. You couldn't have hand placed the ball better what Derek Etienne did. And so you felt great, you know, for him. Absolutely, man. I mean, we talked about Pedro Santos being out and, you know, having the ability to need someone step up. I mean, what a storyline for him, scoring in the biggest game that he's ever played in his life. And then not only to be a part of it, but to get on the score sheet and give your team a 2-0 lead. Just what, I believe 6 minutes after Zellerman scored?
Yeah, I think it was 24th.
Already, like, just, I mean, yeah, bang, bang. Like, now Seattle's in big trouble.
Yeah, I think it was like 24th minute and then 31st minute, which there's something about that I actually need to bring up now that we're here. But we'll talk about the minute thing in a second, because there is something pretty cool there. But, yeah, that second goal, to me, I was talking with some friends last night. That was where I started to say, okay, they didn't just come out and get one to kind of bounce the right way beyond Stephen Fry, and they've been on fire. But then Seattle, you know, you've seen that, right? With Seattle, we saw it against Minnesota. You can have 80 minutes where you're pretty good, and then all of a sudden Seattle's like, all right, now we're done now. And then they just take the game over and score two goals, and you're sitting and going, how did this happen in 10 minutes? So I was worried, even with getting that first goal, I was like, okay, they're playing really well, but if Seattle evens this up before halftime, they're going to have all the momentum and they're going to feel like all they need is one goal and they got two and, you know, 5 minutes, whatever it was last time. So they'll be totally fine if they get a second goal or if they get a goal to tie it up. And then that second goal was like, no, the Crew are actually getting the result they deserve out of this game so far. And that was then where it was like, all right, if they don't concede by halftime, they're going to have to weather a crazy 10-15 minute run from Seattle to come out of it. Like, I knew, everyone I think knew that was going to be what would happen. They'd come out with their hair on fire. If you could hang on through that, you're going to grind them down. They're going to start questioning themselves, and then maybe you break them down and get that third goal. And as it worked out, that's kind of how the rest of this played out. And Lucas El Arayan, after a, you know, nice patient decision there by Luis Diaz to lay it off to him, you saw his eyes were as big as dinner plates when he got that ball on his foot. And he didn't make a mistake with it. Unlike, I will, and this is not to rip him because he had a fantastic game and had a fantastic playoffs, but Artur early in the game got in a spot like that where the ball came to him in the box, and you could see, like, he was like, oh, this could be my moment. This could be it. And then I forget who it was from Seattle that ran up and just, you know, scraped the ball away from him and it, you know, went out. Yeah, because he's not in that situation that often, and that's the quality you're getting from Lucas El Arayan. Is he's a different level guy. He's just, it's not something we've ever seen in Columbus, the amount of talent that this dude has, and I am here for it completely.
I mean, yeah, it's just, I don't even know what to say about El Arayan. I mean, Bone, he's stupid. Like, he's stupid good. You wanted the quality of player, you got the quality of player, and he's proven time and time again that he is able to step up in big time moments. And so the fact that you have a quality, you know, a player of that quality on your team for the foreseeable future, and in the first year, not only does he win Newcomer of the Year award across the league, but what does he do? I mean, he comes out in the biggest game that he'll play, and he bags two and also gets an assist. I mean, it was a remarkable job landing Lucas El Arayan, and he was the biggest difference in the game. I mean, he was, you know, and the Seattle Sounders did not have an answer for him, and he was just a nightmare on the field for them. I also thought it was great too, Bone. I mean, you know, a great story about Crew Academy player Aiden Morris coming in, you know. I mean, and I think what Porter did with him shows you why he is one of the best minds in MLS and is obviously one of the best coaches, because, you know, he allowed Artur to kind of sit back deeper and, you know, clean up the mistakes that Aiden Morris was running. We're talking about this kid with fresh legs, being 19 years old, youngest ever participant in the MLS Cup final at 19 years old, running around making some big time plays. And the stage wasn't too big for him, man. Like, a bunch of credit goes to Caleb Porter for playing that young man and the system that was able to allow him to succeed on Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, you're spot on that. And Aiden Morris deserves a ton of credit for the way he played. And Caleb Porter deserves a ton of credit for having the faith to put him out there. And, you know, I was worried that they, or not worried, I guess. I thought, once Pedro went down and certainly once Nagby went down, I thought, all right, they're gonna need to play this game ugly. It's gonna need to be like a very CONCACAF type of game where, you know, there's gonna be fouls left and right. There's gonna be just every time you get hit, you're gonna go down for 4 minutes trying to milk everything, kill clock, go to penalties, and hopefully you win it, you know, that way. That's what I thought they were gonna do. And instead, Caleb Porter said, no, we are one of the deepest, if not the deepest roster in the league. I'm going to put out a 19-year-old kid who I know is nails, and that guy's not going to disappoint me, and we're going to run our system. I mean, he changed a little bit to your point about they didn't do the pivot thing that they do as much with Artur and Nagby, but they let Artur kind of just sit home and clean up, like you mentioned. That's a significant change, but it wasn't the type of change I thought they were going to have to do to make this happen. Instead, Aiden Morris came out and pretty much owned Nico Ladero, one of the best midfielders in MLS history. Like one of the most creative attacking minds we've ever seen in MLS. And he owned him for the entirety of that game. 19 years old. Like they're spraying champagne and they got to put tape over his mouth. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. Like, holy hell, he's 19 years old and he just won an MLS Cup and he wasn't like hanging on for dear life. I mean, I'm sure he did have his moments, but he was so solid throughout the entire game. I'm floored by it. I'm absolutely floored by it. And I'm thrilled that, you know, that's a guy that if he keeps progressing and continuing, that's a crew academy prospect that could be here for a few years, be really good. He might be a solid MLS player his whole career. He might not ever ascend to this again. We don't know. Or he might go on and be a guy that the Crew sell for $5 or $10 million to somebody down the road. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's just, I love the fact that whatever happens with the rest of his career, he had this moment and it was truly special and he deserves credit for it. The defense behind him, which we'll get to that in a second, deserves credit. But man, Caleb Porter, that took guts. It absolutely took guts to do that.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, you always talk about, Caleb. Are you going to put your guys in the best situation to win? And they did, Bone. I mean, he has not stepped a foot wrong. He put the team out there, which he felt that they were going to compete the best. And if that's going to be starting young Aiden Morris at 19 years old in a big spot against Seattle, then you know what? The kid is not too small for the moment, and he's going to rise to the occasion, and he exactly did that. So, again, I mean, hats off to Caleb Porter for deploying Aiden Morris, and hats off for Aiden Morris for playing, I mean, a wonderful, wonderful 90 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It was truly great by him. Let's talk about another guy who had a great 90 minutes and who has had a great season, great couple of seasons, guy who is a fantastic redemption story in Jonathan Mensah.
Yeah.
This guy, when he first got here, Beam, I don't know if you quite remember it, but the vitriol this guy got from people like me who watch this team, who are passionate about this team, and they brought him in. He was a big money signing, and his first season was about as rocky as I've seen for a, you know, for a star defender being brought into MLS to kind of fix a team's problem. And he could not find his footing in the first year. And I was very down on him. I thought he was a complete mistake to bring here. He's gone from that to now being an MLS best 11 defender, arguably should have been defender of the year. Sorry, Walker Zimmerman, that you can look like a mountain man all you want. Jonathan Mensah probably should have won that. But either way, one of the best defenders in the league, captain of this team now, took over that this year. Pretty big responsibility. And pretty big responsibility in a year with COVID, the weirdest year we've seen in sports. Right. And that's who was kind of captaining and guiding this group of dudes. That's,
well, and also think too, I mean, you know, his running mate back there, Vita Wormhorn, missed the entire season.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We took away the guy that, yes.
You're supposed to have your dual guy back there. And all of a sudden he's out for the year. So now it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, step up in a big time way. But you're right, man. I mean, this dude is great back there.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, he hasn't seen his wife in 10 months. His wife's been back in Ghana. So he's living this out in a way that we've all kind of felt some level of COVID making life difficult. He's felt it as much as anyone. He and Josh Williams together have partnered up and played really well. And Josh deserves a lot of credit for that, too. You know, Northeast Ohio kid, grew up here, you know, rooting for the team. I mean, I'm just so happy for guys like him and Matt Lampson, who are products of the youth system,
right,
of this team. And now they get to realize some of this. In both of them, their second stints, I think, with the crew too. Both of them have left and come back. But Jonathan Mensah, I just, the way he has played in guiding this team defensively, they're the best defense in the league. There's no question they deserved to have a clean sheet in this game. There were a few chances, but again, if you know how powerful Seattle's offense is, they were going to have a handful of opportunities at the net, right? I mean, that's just, you can't go through a 90-minute game with a team like that and not expect they're going to get a couple free headers. They're going to have a couple shots, but they pretty much had everything covered. I mean, you can argue maybe Seattle, you know, should have had a goal given their opportunities. Maybe one could have gone in, but they were not in this game most of the time offensively, and that's because of the credit that the crew deserve for holding down on defense. They did not leave these guys with any space. They marked everyone out of this game, and it was fantastic to watch. So,
well, yeah, and I mean, you look at, you know, the entire game flow and kind of what it was. I mean, sure, did Seattle hold a lot of the possession? Yeah, that's fine. You can score the ball with the ball, but if you don't get the ball into dangerous areas,
right,
then you're not going to be able to score it. I mean, yeah, did they have a decent amount of shots? Sure. Look at the shots on target. What was it, 2 or 3?
Yeah, you know? Right. I mean,
it really that many, you know, great opportunities for them. The one, you know, which kind of, I don't know, got everybody off the couch with Seattle's opportunity. The one that looked like it was going far post where Room had no clue where it was at. And yeah, it ends up going wide in the second half. Like, that was really, Bone, their best opportunity in what they had. And at that point, I don't remember what minute it was. I remember it was pretty late on in the game when the crew had a 2-0 lead. You know, you start to feel like if they get a goal back, of course, they're going to be pressing. But, I mean, you're right. Give immense amount of credit to the midfield, the way that they displayed themselves. And of course, the back line for the crew, because they did not step a foot wrong. That is one of the best attacking forces in all of MLS. And what did you do? I mean, you held them to a clean sheet. They didn't have a single goal in their biggest game of the year for as much firepower as they have. And it ultimately, you just frustrated them. You frustrated the hell out of them all night, and you got under their skin, and you were grimy, and you were gritty. And they were just unable to put away the very few good opportunities that they had.
Yeah, it was a truly special performance, and it deserved the scoreline. What, you know, there are some games where it's like, well, this team dominated, but then how did they end up with 2 goals? How did they lose by 2? I don't know. This was not any of that. This was a dominant performance, and they deserved everything they got from it. I want to bring up Nate Beckman, buddy of mine, who a longtime crew fan.
Been on the show before.
Yeah, Nate did. Yeah, he came in. He was doing the he organized the some of the different groups when we were having like the different sections of Mafre. He talked about that, and we had him on. But Nate pointed something out on Twitter that I thought was pretty interesting. In 2008, two of the goals were scored. The first goal was scored in the 31st minute of that game. And then there was a goal scored in the 82nd minute. The third goal was scored by Frankie Hadick in the 82nd minute. In this game, there was a goal scored in the 31st minute, and there was a goal scored in the 82nd minute. How friggin' weird is that? That two of the goals in these two MLS Cups that will always have some kind of tie because they're the two the crew have won now, two different minutes of those games had a goal scored by the crew in each of them. I find that to be just really bizarre. So not that it really means anything. It was just a weird coincidence that I like that we find these things in soccer. I like that people like pay attention to stuff like that. But I thought that was a pretty interesting coincidence. I also think the comparisons between Lucas Zelarayán and Guillermo Barros Schelotto are going to be impossible to ignore. This, mm-hmm, for those who weren't around in 2008, this is what it felt like when you had Guillermo. But you got to remember, when he came to the league, he was 34 years old.
Right.
Lucas Zelarayán's what, 28, 27, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, you're getting a player at a much higher caliber earlier in his career, and this is the type of stuff that he did, that Schelotto did here. That's what Lucas Zelarayán is doing. This is what it felt like. He assisted Lucas Zelarayán on, I think, he either assisted or scored the last 5 or 6 goals of the playoffs, and he did assist on or score every game-winning goal in the playoffs. So, like, this is when your big players need to step up. And that to me is the beauty of having a guy like him, and that's why I'm so impressed with him. Because, yeah, he was good all year. He put some numbers up. He had injuries to deal with. The big lights come on, he showed up, and in every playoff game he made a play, He did it in MLS Cup, had one of the most dominant performances you'll ever see in MLS Cup. I'd have to go back and look at, you know, all the different ones out there. I mean, Dwayne Di Rosario back in the day was really good, and had some great performances in the play in MLS Cup, but this is as good as I can remember. Him and Scalotto are two of the best performances I've ever seen in MLS Cup, and they both happened in the black and gold. So
yeah, it's I don't know, man. It's pretty amazing. You just happen to feel, you're so damn happy, you know? Like it's business well done, and it was your biggest player stepping up in the biggest game, and you're right. I mean, two goals and an assist. What more could you want?
Yeah.
you can't ask for anything more.
Let's talk about the celebration. So of course, whistle blows, you see everybody run on the field.
Yeah.
They bring Don Garber out, good old Dong.
Dong, yeah.
Yeah, good old Dong. And he tried to get through that lame ass speech.
Yeah. Everybody was like, I'm sitting there watching on my couch. I'm like, dude, just give him the trophy.
Yeah.
All right.
Just don't stop.
Just get out of here. Scram.
and of course he tried to do the whole, he tried to like, well, and you know, great year. Let's talk about Inter Miami and Nashville. It's like,
yeah,
what?
Exactly.
I'm like, what, dude, the hell do they have to do with anything?
Right. Yes. We were so excited about our expansion teams and coming in here. No. I'm like, man, nobody gives a flip about that right now. Not a single iota of a flip.
No, the problem is with him is he knows that they don't get on national television very often. I mean, I know they're on Fox Sports 1 and ESPN, but this is Fox. Like, you're on primetime on a big four network, and he wanted to get all of it out there and like, hey, also go to MLSshop.com. Like, he's trying everything to be like, please pay attention to our league more. Please watch us. And it's stupid. I don't know why you need, if I were an expansion team, I wouldn't want to be mentioned there. Like, who cares? You got the captain of the team waiting anxiously to take the trophy. Right. And you're sitting here trying to tell us about like, oh, and Austin's going to open it. You're like, who? Shut up. Who cares? And then, of course, the good thing that Jonathan Mensah did was, I think they wanted him to stand on that platform.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
And he was like, no, F that.
Talk about the cool thing, too, of D. Haslam, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was amazing, right? I mean, any owner of the team, you're usually the first one to be able to hoist the trophy. And you see D. Haslam just acquiesce to Jonathan Mensah, where she's like, just you take it. Like,
it's your trophy.
I don't even want it.
Yeah. And I think, and I know in like, Don Garber wants this to be the NFL so bad. Like, Don Garber came up through the NFL's lawyering ranks. Like, that's where he cut his teeth in sports management and all that stuff. Like, he and Roger Goodell were on the same career path, and Raj got the NFL and Don had to settle for MLS. So he wants to be able to do the commissioner thing of like, here's the owner, I'll give you the trophy. But in soccer around the world, they don't do that. They give it to the captain. The captain picks it up and holds it up for the team. That's what happens. And I'm glad that's what happened here. I think it's stupid that they tried to put him away from everyone. Someone pointed out to me, maybe that was like a COVID thing, but I guess it could have been, maybe. For, I don't know. Anyway, he whatever, was around those people and then ran back to where the actual rest of the team was. And so the COVID plan didn't work, if that was the idea. But, and of course, we got the great shot of them hoisting the trophy. And that was fun for me with the girls, because they've seen, they used to ask me all the time, so do they get a trophy for winning this game? And I'm like, no, you don't get a trophy for winning a game. You have to win the whole league, you know? And they're like, oh, okay. They were always excited to find out when somebody gets a trophy. So they were staying up excited to know if the Crew win this game, they're going to give them a trophy like right here. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get to see that. And so they loved that. They were thrilled about it. I have spent entirely too much money on championship gear. I think I'm up to like at least $250.
Several hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, like I've spent way, and I will spend more, because I learned my lesson the last time. I bought like a championship T-shirt and a scarf, and I was like, that's good. And then I would see all this other stuff a year or two later, and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't know them. Ah, shoot, I should have bought that. Cool. So this time it's like, no, I'm getting all this. I'm, even if I don't even open it, I'm saving it so that later on I can pull it out and be like, oh yeah, I have this shirt that I never wore from 2020. I'm going to keep that. It's going to be weird to be wearing a year that was full of such difficulty, right? But 2020 now has a slightly different take for me because of the fact that the Crew found a way to win in this year. So I have said this before, I'll say it again. I think there needs to be a parade. Not the one I did on Sunday morning, but an actual
drunk and nude.
Yeah, that came from our show on Friday.
Yeah,
where I said
went back and listened to it, by the way. That was pretty amazing.
I said I would run out naked on High Street. And yeah, so it worked out that I was there were levels of nudity. I was semi-nude. We'll put it that way. You'll never find out exactly how nude I was unless you were out there. But yeah, I do want to see a parade, socially distanced or otherwise. If they even have to wait till the summer, I don't care. Have a parade the weekend that they open up the new stadium. Hopefully by then,
whatever,
it'll
who
be
cares?
It'll
Team's
be a different year.
Not going anywhere, Bone. We got time.
Yeah, yeah. But in 2008, what they did with this trophy, or more specifically in 2009, was there were multiple bars that I remember having their night with the trophy. Where
that's awesome.
You could they would show up. There would be a few players, or you know, well, Siggy Schmidt wasn't there because he had left already. But some of the other coaching staff would be there and. You know, front office people, and they would just sit out and they'd talk a little bit, and then you'd come up and get your picture with the trophy. And I think that I hope they do stuff like that when we can do stuff like that. But also, I told you this in some of the show notes earlier today. Take it to grocery store, like take it everywhere. Get people who don't know anything about the crew to go. Oh wow, what is that? Oh, that's what the crew want. Oh, that's their that's a crew player. Oh, that's cool. I'm going to get a picture. I think my cousin likes the crew. Maybe I'll send that to them. Like anything right. That gets people to say, oh, the crew, they're in my head again. I need to think about them again. And maybe that helps continue to build the brand a little bit to get more people there. But I don't know what more you want at this point. If you're trying to decide to make the plunge or not and follow the crew a little bit, I don't know. What do you want? They got a new stadium. They won a championship. They've got great ownership. What do you want? They're fantastic. Come on out and watch them.
It was really cool, Bone, yesterday. So we're recording this podcast on Monday morning. Yesterday I was driving down 71. You know, I live up in the Clintonville area, and I was driving wherever I needed to go, and then hopped on 670 from there. And it was a really cool like 7-minute experience for me driving because they still had the scoreboard up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They still had the scoreboard on from Saturday night's game. So, you know, it's about 10:30 yesterday morning and I'm driving past Montfrey and you can see the scoreboard on it. It still has the champions banner up there and the confetti falling, which I thought was really damn cool. Right. Mm, and now we're just going to keep that scoreboard on. Like already I'm looking at it and I'm like, God, that is, it's pretty amazing. You know, like last night really did happen. It's not a dream. And then, you know, you hop on 670 right there and there was the brand new stadium. So like that 7-minute like experience, like thinking back to the game on Saturday night and seeing like the old stadium and what that is, and then driving past the new stadium, which just looks like a fortress right now.
Oh,
like it's gonna be
so
unbelievable.
Cool.
But yeah, I thought it was really cool. You know, it was a moment yesterday where it kind of hit me where I'm like, damn, like that is and just like I don't know, everything kind of like started like working over me. And this whole experience, I'm like almost went from the team being ripped away to new ownership, you know, to a not a great start off to the season last year for Caleb. And, you know, so many questions and about COVID and COVID Cup and like all these different things. And then hoisting the MLS Cup and then driving past the new stadium. Like, I don't know, it kind of just all came crashing down on me in that moment. It was very cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's really hard to put into words when you start to really think about just how difficult this was and how this was not supposed to happen 3 years ago. It looked very bleak. It looked like the team was going to leave. And I mean, you know this. We went through it at the time. There were plenty of people that I knew that were very nice to me. They humored me, all that stuff. But when I started trying to, you know, hey, I think maybe there's a chance we can try to save this thing. They're doing a rally. They're doing this. They're doing that. You know, there are a lot of well-meaning people who are like, that's great. I'm glad you're trying. You know, that's not going to happen. And, right. and I had to, you know, I had those thoughts too of like, I don't know, everybody's doing this, but we've seen it in sports. How many times somebody decides to move a team and it doesn't happen. And now to have this little stamp on the end of that, you know, like we talked about the end of that era where now we can just, as I think Dr. Pete had a line about that where he said, this was the team that saved. Now it's the team that wins championships. Now it's the team that let's move beyond that. Now we're this championship club and we're going to show you more of how that's who we are. And I just feel so good about the future of this team. So yeah, you're right. It's a touching moment. It's an exciting moment for the city. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk about what is next for the crew. And that includes some action that they're going to be involved in maybe as soon as like 2 months from now. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United. Welcome back to Bone and Beam United. Let's talk a little bit about the future of the Columbus Crew, because we obviously have spent a lot of time on how great it was to see them hoist MLS Cup again. But now we get to look at the bigger picture because, you know, we're going deep on this. We're thinking a little bit further along. And the thing that I keep coming back to, Beamer, in my head is how, like, the Haslams spent $100 million or more on Miles Garrett's contract.
Yeah.
And they can fund one of the best teams in MLS for a fraction of that for a decade. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they could spend a fraction of that every year and they would not hit his contract number for over a decade probably.
They're doing just fine.
Yeah, like this is, I wonder, because Dee Haslam, you mentioned how she took her cues perfectly and was like, yes, this is the players, it's not mine, this is good, let them have it. I love the fact that she seems to get it so much, and that she's talked about how, you know, Jimmy's starting to understand it, and we don't know soccer, but we're trying to learn soccer and all this other stuff that's so good. But the money that they have to be able to spend, Anthony Precourt did not have that, you know, and the Hunt family had it, but they didn't like to spend it on soccer. I wonder how much this feeling of so quickly coming in, where they struggled with the Browns for so long to get it right, and now they seem to have gotten that turnaround too. But they came in with the Crew and nailed the coaching hire, nailed Tim Bezpachenko, which we haven't talked about, nailed the front office hire too, getting all these guys in, figuring out these contracts, signing the right players. They nailed that. The roster's solid. They came in, and then they won MLS Cup. Maybe this is their motivation to say, well, why would we just want to win one? Why would we just want to be like a really good playoff team? That's not our expectation. And I truly wonder what winning this quickly does for them as far as their mental and emotional investment in this team.
Yeah, I look at this situation, right? And you knew coming in they were going to have some challenges. And I think you saw for the majority last year, Bone, the challenges what presented in the year 2019, right? I mean, you're trying to get together a team in which you've never kind of been in this realm before with soccer. I know you've been in football, so you kind of understand, you know, how the umbrella of a general working of a sports team goes. But at the same time, it's such a different world. Like, I will tell you this, man, you know, we do this podcast, episode number 69, right? I still don't understand Tam and Gam. We have talked to Tim Bezpachenko. He has literally told me to my face while we are talking to him what Tam and Gam means. I don't understand it. I will never understand it. And so you have to get into these realms, right? Of like, okay, well, who can we put in positions who are the best people to succeed at their job? And they obviously felt Caleb Porter was the man for the job, home run hire. You felt that Tim Bezpachenko was the man for the job to come in here, home run hire. And so you put the people in charge you feel like are great, and maybe they don't really know how the inner workings of a professional soccer team works. But at the end of the day, if you are able to put the right people in charge to make these decisions for you, and they don't feel like they're necessarily on the strictest leash of all time when it comes to their financial outfalling and the way that they're able to build a team the way that they want, then you're set up for greatness, right? And so you just look at the future of this team. You have to give a ton of credit to the Haslam family for coming in and having mega deep coffers, right? You're right about that. Miles Garrett, $100 million contract. All right, sweet. You can field the Crew for, 10% of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just, I don't know, man. It's pretty unbelievable, but you're right. You start to get this taste of winning trophies, and certainly you're not building a stadium just for good faith. Like, you're wanting people to come to those games. You're wanting to make the city of Columbus proud. You are wanting to give them a winning product. And the fact that you did this and glorified everything that they have done over the last 18, 24 months, being able to get this team together, make it a winning team on the field. But you're right. There's absolutely no reason with the fact that you are hoisting MLS right now, hoisting MLS Cup, and then coming in next year, you open up this brand new building, which is going to be spectacular, why you should not want to keep that. And if you have the deep coffers, you know that the front office of this organization is going to be able to put a winning team on the field And so the future is incredibly bright for this team.
Yeah. And I think having Dr. Pete and the Edwards family as part of this ownership group too, they obviously are also putting in their expenditures, and this is something that is, you know, they've taken those big risks too. But I think that he has that bridge to be able to say, yeah, look, I've been around this league for 25 years. I have seen all this stuff. He can help contextualize what they're seeing, that like, oh, so we're just, you know, we came in, we made a few hires and we won MLS Cup. This is easy. Like, it's not. They have literally hit every hire out of the park. And that means good things going forward, because now I think they've realized this is a place where they can be successful. And I'll tell you how important it is for Lucas El Arayan to be as good as he is. Imagine you go out, they tell you, okay, you need to go sign a guy and you need to spend this money and, you know, you have to pay all this money. Yeah, remember, you, even though it's not, it pales in comparison to what you pay Myles Garrett or what you're going to pay Baker Mayfield, you're talking about $7 million just to get the rights to a guy's contract. And then you have to pay him a salary on addition to that. And this is for something that isn't as fully well understood as the NFL is for the Haslams. To then have Lucas El Arayan come in and not just be good, but be that difference maker in the big moments, I think that helps. Imagine if, like, he came in and was a complete flop, you know? Wouldn't you think they might be slightly more gun-shy the next time Bez or Porter said, we need this guy, and it's going to cost $8 million to get him out of, you know, whatever he is, but we need this player. At some point, there would be a limit to that, even though they've got ridiculous wealth, if they felt like it wasn't going to pay off or they didn't believe in the guys making those decisions.
I mean, they're not going to do it just because.
No. So I'm saying, like, now when those two come back and say, look, we need this player and here's X, Y, and Z, the Haslams, I think, are going to have way more incentive to believe them and say, okay, we trust your judgment. Look how well you've done so far. And that might mean you see different caliber players, even like, you might have three Lucas El Arayans in a few years. Not just like him. I'm just saying three guys of that caliber where they go to a better league like Mexico or a you know, at least a more expensive league like Mexico, and they're able to get players out of that league to come to MLS and play for the Crew. And Lucas El Arayan can tell those guys, like, hey, you come here, you're going to have a great life. It's a great place to live. Like, I'm just saying this is so good for everything that you have to do to be competitive when you're a smaller market team in sports, but in MLS specifically. It's hard to recruit guys to come to not LA and not New York and not Miami and not Atlanta. You know what I mean? Those are the big cities people want to go to. And
as
so
Steven Gerrard once said, I mean, you got to go to places like Columbus, you know?
Right. Yes, exactly. Like, the fact that they have a guy now who's done that, has won a championship and is making great money doing it, he can talk about how great the city is, and the Haslams are there with the checkbook and the Edwards family. Like, this is all good. But I wanted
And the people know too. I mean, listen, we both, I know that, you know, you're out a little bit west, and I mean, you have the affinity for the city, right? And a lot of people living in this or listening to this podcast, you lived in the city and you absolutely love it, right? And so you get that little indoctrination into the city bone, and you ultimately find a ton of people that don't want to leave, and they make it their home and they love it. And it's something that I know that my wife and I absolutely love living here. We love the people here. We love what the city is about and what it means to a lot of people. So yeah, it's just, you know, would it be a tough sell going up against Miami and LA? Yeah, maybe to the eye test. You start to get here though, and you live here for 6 months to a year, and you're like, you know what? This place kicks ass. Like, absolutely love it.
Well, and I look at it too. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, what would be your motivation to come here if you're not from around here? And, you know, we have people that live in New York and LA their whole lives who would never think of wanting to live in Columbus, Ohio. But I can't imagine what it's like for someone who's from Argentina, who then has moved to Mexico, like Lucas El Arayan, who then is like, where am I going? Okay, Columbus, Ohio. It's cold.
Where is that on a map?
Right. Like, it just, and you know what? He might actually know only because of guys like Guillermo Barros Schelotto and Federico Higuain, fellow countrymen who played here. I love the fact that this team continues to be more international. More players are showing up and doing things like this. That's going to get more headlines. I saw CNN International did a whole story on the Crew and Save the Crew, and it was, you know, a couple British guys breaking down the Crew and talking about the Crew on an international, you know, channel that's going across the world. That's great. That might be somebody's first introduction to the city of Columbus. Awesome. Hopefully, maybe someday they'll come over here and check it out. But what I wanted to get into finally before we wrap this up is what's happening in the next couple months. Because when you become the champion of MLS, you now get to play in extra tournaments. You get more opportunities to play for more trophies. The rich get richer in that way in soccer, but especially in MLS. So we have CONCACAF Champions League. That's a thing. You've heard of the UEFA Champions League,
right?
We have that here as well in North and Central America. So that is all the countries, basically from Canada on down to Costa Rica, that or Panama. I'm sorry, all those countries participate in that trophy and in that competition. The crew have qualified for the 2021 version of that. Currently, the 2020 version is still going on because of COVID. It would have been wrapped up before now, but because of COVID, they've pushed it back to, I think they're playing, the semifinals are this week, and then the finals are December 22nd. So they're going to wrap this thing. Yeah, they're going to wrap this all up in like 8 days. I mean, so you can watch this week, the end of this year's CONCACAF Champions League, just to see, you know, just to see what it is if you want to check it out. But what's cool is there's already been some qualification for next year's. And from what we're hearing, sources on the team have told me that they're hoping the current model is to try to get started in February for this year's tournament. Yeah. So the crew could be playing in you know, less than 3 months. They could be back before the MLS season starts up. Now, the thing that makes it difficult is we do have this COVID situation. And traveling in between countries is a bit difficult right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, literally, the crew could have a away game in Costa Rica, in Honduras, right, in Nicaragua. These are where the teams are from, and of course, Mexico. So, all those countries are going to have different rules about who can come in, who can't. The U.S. is going to have different rules about how you quarantine when you come back from those countries. So, it's going to make this season challenging, but the bottom line is the crew are in, along with Philadelphia, Portland, and Atlanta. Those are the other teams that have qualified from MLS. They're in a competition where they could play Monterrey, they could play León, they could play Club America, they could play Cruz Azul. These teams could potentially. Tigres is not this year. They did not make it. They are not in the qualification, which would have been a great storyline because that's Lucas's team, Lucas El Arayan.
Yeah, but they are. Do they hand out like automatic qualifiers for next year? Like if Tigres wins Champions League this year?
No. So Tigres, yeah, because Tigres just won. They'll be in next year. So they will be in the 2022 version of this, basically, is how that is. Because they along with this is the Apertura, right? And then the Clausura is the second half of their Mexican season, I think. Either way, so they count their season as 2020, 2021, and then those teams qualify for the 2022 champions. So, yeah, what you are seeing, these teams are all from 2019 and the Apertura and Clausura runners-up from last year. So it's first and second place from each half of the season is what they do. So, yeah. So this is cool, though. I'm excited for the crew to get to play in this. The other teams, Olympia and Marathon from Honduras and Saprissa from Costa Rica is there, along with Alajuelenes, I believe is how you say it. I'm probably butchered that. What I know is their nickname is La Liga. So I will be calling them La Liga. I'm guaranteeing you the crew will draw Alajuelenes because I can't say it. And I'm guessing a lot of other sports figures in this town will not be able to say it. So we're going to have that happening. So just call them La Liga if you want to. And then Real Esteli from Nicaragua, Atletico Pantoja from Dominican Republic. The Canadian team is still not decided, but that will probably be Toronto, and that will probably be decided, I'm guessing, sometime in January. They'll find a way to play that game. But it's TFC playing like a team from the Canadian Premier League, which is like USL. So
you're right. Didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, so Toronto has two ways to get in. They can win it all through MLS, but if they get shut out in MLS, they can still go through their Canadian tournament. And so they get in every year because of course they do.
Right, exactly. But I just want to know, Bone, I mean, there's only one thing left to do, right? I mean, it's to win the quadruple and to really bag that. I mean, MLS Cup champs again next year for the repeat. U.S. Open Cup Champions League, and then, I mean, your supporter
shield. Well,
there's your four right there.
You're missing. There's one other one we can do too, because this is also cool. So the Liga MX Campeón de Campeones, that is great, where they take the Apertura and the Clausura winner and they play each other in the summer, right? So they have two halves of the season. Assuming there are two different winners of each half, they play each other, even though those are both counted as champions of Mexico, they'll play each other. The winner of that game will play the Crew in probably September. And then that will be a trophy game. Like, it's just a one-off. Yeah, the Campeones Cup is another. So they have a chance to win CONCACAF. I mean, again, this would be insane. CONCACAF Champions League, Campeones Cup, U.S. Open Cup.
Best team the world's ever seen, Bone, say it.
And then you know what happens if they win CONCACAF Champions League. They go
to UEFA Champions League.
No, right? they go to the FIFA. They go to the Club World Cup.
Amazing.
And they can play Bayern Munich or whoever wins it this year. My God. Just imagine, Beamer, if that happens and somehow it works out.
Congrats on Alfonso Davies. Watch out. Here comes Lucas.
Wouldn't it be amazing if it worked out somehow, like Manchester City won Champions League? And for some, and they might do this. They might say, you know what? We don't want to start our starter. Let's have Zach Steppen play in the Club World Cup Championship. And it turns out that Zach gets to play against the Crew in the Club World Cup. So far-fetched. But you know what, folks? It's a possibility. And I enjoy, this is what we should be doing. We should be laughing and thinking of ridiculous things our team could do over the next 5 years. Because right now, who's going to argue with any of that after what you just saw against Seattle? Who's going to argue with that after Save the Crew? No one should. No, not me either. So that is it for us. We will leave you, though, with this. Chris Doran, Neil Sika, and Jordan Angeli were on The Fan. They were doing the radio call. Neil and Jordan obviously do the television broadcast, but since this was a national game, they jumped on with Chris, who does a phenomenal job calling the games here on The Fan every week. So I hope that everybody enjoys this. It's about 7 minutes that you can listen to. These are all the goals. I think there's a save in there from Aloy Room. And, of course, the final call of MLS Cup 2020, the Crew winners 3-0 over Seattle. Before I play that, I will tell you this. We appreciate you guys throughout this year listening with us in 2020. And so we are going to take a couple weeks off because Christmas is coming up, New Year's, all that, holidays for everyone. So whatever holidays you're celebrating, we hope you have a great one with you and yours. And we will be back with you the first week of the new year. So enjoy this call. Consider it an early holiday present, Christmas present for you. And we'll see you next year on Bone and Beam United.
Valenzuela will play it forward to Etienne Jr. Etienne controls. He's got pressure coming from behind. He'll play it back square into the center circle. That's where the youngster holds. Aiden Morris plays it outside to Harrison Oppel. Whip ball in far post. Celerion shoots and scores for Columbus! Celerion celebrates in the near corner. Columbus is up 1-0 in Major League Soccer's final game of the 25th season.
The entire thing, Chris Doran, starts with the youngster, Aiden Morris. Everybody's talking, Darlington Nagbe, but you know what? When you watch Darlington Nagbe and you train with him every single week, this is what you get. Morris gets out of pressure, not once, but twice. And who's there to tap it in? It's Lucas.
So much talk about what Nico Ladero means to the Sounders, but Lucas Celarayan is starting a whole new generation of Crew fans on his own single-handedly in 2020. This is a la Scalotto. The assists, the goals, now five straight he's been a part of in the playoffs, hitting for pay dirt.
Outside to Harrison Offal. Whip ball in. Settles it. Celerion's feet. Settles. Snowy gets it to Etienne, who shoots and scores for Columbus. They are celebrating in the near corner, the same place that Celerion scored. Derek Etienne Jr., who joined this team after the MLS's back tournament. finds himself in a starting role tonight because Pedro Santos is not available. Etienne has had one regular season goal. He gets his mark in the postseason.
Technology is a beautiful thing sometimes. It hits the wire, heads back. That was Aiden Morris who won the ball again, then shows his poise. And Zelarayan, who could have pulled the trigger on that shot, but noticed the weak side open, found a wide open Etienne to put it away. Pinch yourself. This is incredible.
Who does that? Passes that extra pass. Lucas Zelarayan is everything you want from a playmaker because he knows when to shoot the ball and he knows when all the players are going to hound him down, clog up the middle, and then there's going to be space for his teammate. That is beautiful. And you know what else is beautiful? The sound of the fans at Mapfre celebrating these goals.
35 yards out. Ladero will lay this ball inside the 18. Head ball near post. And oh, my goodness, a save by Aloy Roon from the corner. That effort by Seattle snuffed out by Aloy Roon.
That's only his second save tonight, but much more peculiar than the first one. Beautiful stuff in the upper 90. The man who won save of the year, goalkeeper of the year finalist.
Aloy Ladero from the corner, far side, served in, cleared out by Zardes. Luis Diaz gets it on the near touchline. 1v1 far near side. He works against the defender, wins it. Inside the 18, lays it back. Zelarayan's there, shoots and scores for Columbus!
Hey, baby, I hear the Blues are calling, Seattle.
Get out of town! Luis Diaz! So calm, so cool. Couple of chop backs there. He finds his pal, Lucas Zelarayan. How many times have we seen him score on that end? To that corner, to perfection. It doesn't get better.
Everyone thought Caleb Porter needed 3 years to get the build started. He's essentially done it in a year and a half. Long throw from Seattle on the near touchline. It's won by Columbus and whipped by Aiden Morris back towards the Seattle 18. It'll be headed by Leardham back to Stephen Fry. There's less than a minute of added time left. Fry drives this ball all the way forward. Mensa wins the header. Sends it back to the center circle. Mattia Lache gets the second ball and sends it into the attacking half. Scooped up by Seattle. Leardham on the far side. It's won by Lucas Zelarayan. That's the whistle, and Columbus has won Major League Soccer's Cup Final. 3-0 the score. They defeat Seattle, and they get the trophy.
It's a fairy tale for the fans. Glory to Columbus. Add that second star. Champions of Major League Soccer for the second time. What a moment.
The players have emptied the benches. The post-game show is about to get arranged. But I want to hear from Jordan Angeli, though, because you were crying last week in a 1-0 decision against New England. And this week you got to be a part of something very, very special that we don't always get a chance to be a part of. What do you think, Jordan?
I'm so happy. They deserve it. I'm crying again. This is so cool. This is so cool. Just what these fans had to go through. And they fought and they persevered through the adversity. And I think what they did for the team showed for them this year. They showed for them tonight, and for them to be at the stands here and hear this and watch this and see this and celebrate. I mean, you can't write a better script than this, you guys. Caleb, 30-30 is coming up soon. Columbus Crew, 2020.
He asked for a 30-for-30 given the challenges that he's had to go through this season and the team as well. The family is going to celebrate, folks, and we're going to bring it to you here live on 97.1 The Fan and 97.1thefan.com.
Caleb Porter is running the touchline.
He's got bad knees. He's got bad knees, but he's running the touchline, and he is encouraging the fans to get on their feet. He's got a 35-year-old bottle of whiskey back at home that he told us he might open if
Happy 23. You know where I'm going after the game.
Caleb Porter is celebrating. And he's celebrating with the fans of Columbus. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the home of Columbus Crew SC, your MLS Cup 2020 champions.